Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become that you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome, welcome, Earth Explorers. All over the planet and the solar system, welcome. You have to keep your arms inside the vehicle. You do have to have your chair reclined, and I want you to look out the window, but be sure to have your seat belts fastened, because tonight we're going to go over events that are going to happen in 2012, and it could get rather bumpy. I want you to make sure that you're safe. Don't fall out of your chair. If you want to join us tonight, anywhere off planet, 530-413-4511. East of Earth, 530-413-4515. West of Earth, 530-413-4520. And if you want to step away from the computer, you want to go for a jog on the beach or a walk around the block, take the dog out, no problem. No problem at all. Call us on your cell phone, 712-432-0075, and then type in the access code 318-116-pound, and you can listen to it live on your cell phone. So just hang the Bluetooth on your ear, put the cell phone in your pocket, grab the leash, the dog, and head out for a walk, because we're going to have a great time tonight. That's 712-432-0075, access code 318-116-pound. The solar wind tonight is a stout 451.5 kilometers per second. Sunspot 1101 is present, but very quiet, and a new one is forming without any chance of solar flares. And the proton density is so low, it is scarcely worth mentioning. And yet, the aurora persists. More evidence that it comes from Earth and not from the sun. But who at NASA might be listening? It looks like this upcoming election has everyone wondering how the current administration stands a chance of retaining control of the House and Senate. A mysterious fire destroyed 10,000 pieces of Harris County, Texas equipment, including voting machines and devices called judges booth controllers that dispense four-digit access codes to voters and serve as mobile ballot boxes to tabulate the count at the end of the election. Houston Fire Department spokesman Patrick Trahan said arson investigators have not yet determined the cause of the three-alarm fire. No injuries were reported. By the way, the fire took place at just a little after 4 a.m., no government workers anywhere to be found. Well, who was it that said that it isn't the casting of the votes, but rather the counting of the votes that determines elections? Well, nobody's casting any suspicions, but yeah, sounds like an amazingly suspicious fire. There were only 18 earthquakes in the past 24 hours, with only two of them over 5.0, and none of them we're over 6.0. The planet is quiet, just like the sun. And you remember when you were a little boy or a little girl and you dreamed about being an astronaut? Well, you might want to instill those dreams in your kids again. Senior NASA officials are so eager to jumpstart advanced technology efforts that they sought and won congressional approval to devote $36.5 million in 2010 funding to 8 high-priority research projects. Those projects, which include joint efforts with the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that's called DARPA, to investigate horizontal launch capabilities, in-orbit satellite servicing, and power beam propulsion. Power beam propulsion, isn't that cool? That means, by the way, we're no longer burning chemicals in space in order to get faster in the vacuum of space. We now use power beams, which means we can accelerate it pretty close to a G for up to a year. Pretty close to the speed of light, about 0.95 light speed. We're getting there, aren't we? Anyway, they're set to begin immediately, said Robert Brown, NASA chief technologist. So if you have those aspirations, get to it. Get your applications in there. Also, tomorrow, Remembering the Future is live on Amazon and available through Kindle. That's right. All you have to do is enter the book name and make your purchase. Now, if you would like it autographed and have access to the audio version when it's finished, if you'd like to have that, go to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com, and place your order, $7.95. Besides that, you get a 25% discount off the printed version if you want that, or $15.95 if you want the printed version. Great value for a self-help book that combines New Age mathematics and true stories from beyond in a book that can help you perhaps break through that barrier of the law of attraction and bring the bounty into your life. We will sign it, ship it, and make sure you are notified when the audio version is ready, no sense not having it in your hands. Also, my very good friend and longtime teacher, Maureen St. Germain, has her CD available that will help you with the meditation in the book. You can get it by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com, clicking on the link, or you can go to maureenstgermain.com, all one word, maureenstgermain.com, or click the link at X Squared Radio, and you can pick up her fine teaching products that will help you with everything you need to get going. Also, please don't forget to click on the Web Talk Radio link at xsquaredradio.com. This is a short 30-minute version of X Squared Radio. It's recorded, not live, but the more you click and the more your friends that you send there, the better our chances are of syndication. That means we get to play on the airwaves. So let's spread the word, get the traffic up on that. We need something positive out there. Don't go away. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Go ahead, call your friends, because this is going to be one for the record books, people. Believe me. Keep the belt low and tight around your waist. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Earth changes are coming, space changes are coming, and we've got the experts here tonight to help explain it to you. We're going to go through a logical sequence. What we are going to talk about tonight is not designed to scare you, okay? It is a vision of the future, a possibility. If our work in the arc of millions of years is accurate, and I must tell you, with the recent completion of the fourth book in the series, subtitled Planet Updates, our work is more than 90% accurate, then I got to tell you, the possibilities are very good that what we are going to report to you tonight may very well happen. It is designed to prepare you. It's designed to empower you. It's not designed to alarm you. But I don't want you to go through life, at least the next few weeks of your life, like sheep with your head low to the ground, munching the green grass. We want you to look up and see what's going on. It has happened before. In 1859, there was a solar magnetic storm of tremendous magnitude. But back then, our highest technology was the telegraph. Still, communications were down for days. Telegraph workers were shocked, literally, just by holding on to the metal pieces of the telegraph equipment. Today, our world moves at a much faster pace. Transactions and the flow of money takes place at the speed of light. Music, money, methods, power, and medicine all rely on electricity. Microelectronics have long been a vulnerability to such things as solar flares, but we're talking about something much, much larger than an ordinary electromagnetic pulse. I remember when we were kids, we regularly did the exercises where we headed for the edge of the room and we hid under our desks with our hands over our heads because we were worried about Soviet attack. Well, those days are over. Maybe we might have a little terrorism here and there that we have to worry about. But as far as global thermonuclear war, that's not our concern anymore. That's not our worry anymore. Our worry now is the source of all life, the sun. Bill Hemmer, with Fox News, talks with renowned physicist and friend of X-Squared Radio, Michio Kaku, in this recent newsroom report. Now, I'm going to play this for you. Bill Hemmer opens with his statement about how bad this solar superstorm could be, and then he brings expert Michio Kaku in, and they discuss it. Get ready, because what we are going to go through is the logical sequence of 2012 events as they are predicted to unfold and who is preparing for them. I hope you have your seatbelts on. Here we go.
Everybody, the sun, it's the source of all life, and it could mean the end of life as we know it. NASA did a study, and its findings are now out. We're not talking about global warming. A brand new government study on the very real destructive threat of solar storms. Check it out. The surface of the sun, a roiling mass of plasma and charged high-energy particles. As we move to the launch pad, we can show exactly what we mean, escaping the surface of the sun and traveling through space to areas down here on Earth. Now, this giant fireball, if that ball hit the Earth and its magnetic shield, it would be devastating. I want to show you New York City at night. Times Square, drove through here at 8 o'clock last night. Streets are empty, but the electric power grid would be wiped out by the current. Lights and computers, transportation, hospitals, all would go down. The study warns it would be a disaster, far worse than anything we have seen before. The menace of these sunstorms poses a bigger threat to more high-tech and advanced countries like the U.S. Everything from our sewage systems to our Wall Street banks operate with our power grid. And a game-changing solar storm that could hit at any time. So how worried should we be? Sounds like we should be. Michio Kaku is an astrophysicist and author of The Physics of the Impossible. Sir, good morning to you. Welcome back here.
Glad to be on your show.
Now, what I'm reading here scares me to death. Should I be that way?
That's right. We're talking about a potential Katrina from outer space. Katrina caused about $100 billion in property damage. And unless we begin to make efforts now to reinforce our satellites and power grid, we could have something maybe 10 times bigger than Katrina, because we're talking about the loss of all electricity and all satellite activity. We'd be thrown 100 years back into the past.
Michio, has this happened before?
In 1859, we had a humongous storm that wiped out telegraph poles, and we tried to then estimate what kind of power could do that. And we now realize that we are very young in the space age. If something like the 1859 storm hit again, it would literally paralyze all the United States, not just for a day or an hour, but for months to years. Transformers would short circuit and burn out. Satellites would be fried to a crisp. And the sun, however, has these storms every 11 years. Every 11 years, the magnetic field flips. But in 2012, we do expect perhaps another big one.
Well, we have never before in our history in human history for that matter, relied so much on technology as we do today. And that's part of what they found in the study, because we rely so much on our ability to communicate through our computers that they would all go down, which would handicap not just New York, but really the eastern half of the United States. That's what the study finds, which would be far worse than the blackout of New York from 4 years ago, Michio.
That's right. Those blackouts only last for a few hours to a day. But if you start to short-circuit all the transformers and blow out the satellites and fry the communications grid, then you're talking about knocking out the United States for months before we can get enough rescue crews and repairmen to handle not just one city, but hundreds of cities around the United States.
You know, Michio, sometimes you come on here and you sound like the doctor of doom and gloom. Does this, does something like this keep you up at night?
It does, and I think with Katrina, you know, engineers knew that Katrina could happen, but they did nothing because they said that it's not going to happen while I'm around. Well, now we learned the lesson. You have to prepare for things, especially when you know that at some point it's inevitable that we're going to have another big one, like we had back in 1859, except this time we're totally dependent on electricity.
Michio, thank you. Hope to see you in person next time. We'll take you on
okay.
the phone if we can. Michio Kaku, thank you for your time today. 1859. I mean, we're going back 150 years on that, Megan. Now he's wondering about 2012. What?
Well, so there you have it. Now, the key to this, there are several keys. Of course, the 1859 one gives us some idea how devastating these can be. And we were not a high-tech nation back then. I mean, telegraph is fairly low-tech. Although we had a lot of wire stretched around, and it made a great antenna, and it picked up the pulse. And as those magnetic waves moved past that wire, it induced a current flow, which was devastating. Now, we're not talking about microelectronics. We're not even talking about electron tubes. This was just simple voltage, clicking on and clicking off, working like electromagnets to make a telegraph. We communicated with Morse code. So the next question is, has it happened recently? I mean, 1859 is a long time ago. Come on, things could be stable by now. But it has happened recently. Halloween of 2003, right before, just as we were completing Volume 1 of The Ark of Millions of Years. Now, we had placed this prediction in the book, but we had no idea how timely our prediction would be. This was a baby compared to what we may experience. The step-up and step-down transformers in our power grid will multiply the pulse hundreds of thousands of times, melting their cores. Now, there's no recovery for these transformers. It's not simply a matter of just unplugging them and weathering it. It doesn't work that way. The way step-up and step-down transformers work, we generate the electricity, in the Tennessee, Middle Tennessee area, the grid is about 161,000 volts on the high-tension lines. That comes into the substation and goes to a step-down transformer that takes it down to 13,800 volts. This is what's called an auto-tap transformer because it's pretty important that the voltage be controlled within 2 or 3%, preferably, but up to 10%. Of that main voltage. Now that drifts up and down depending on the primary power on the high tension lines. So the auto tap transformer will select the number of windings that it takes to step that voltage down to 13,800 volts pretty accurately. And then from there it goes to further step down transformers to go to 4160 and then 440, 220, and then on into your home as 220 and 110 single-phase electricity. Now, when this pulse occurs, it doesn't matter if the transformer is connected to the high-tension lines or not. Those windings act like a giant antenna, sort of like the coil on your car. You're taking 12 volts DC. Many older cars going back well, as far as cars go back, gasoline-powered cars have a coil on them with, somewhere around 10,000 to 40,000 windings of very, very small wire immersed in oil to keep it from overheating. But it takes the 12 volts from the battery, connects it, charges that up like a big electromagnet, like we used to pick up iron filings out of the sand when we were kids with a nail with wire wrapped around it, a little dry cell battery hooked to it. It charges up that magnetic field, then the points open, or the reluctor clicks off the electric switch, and that magnetic field collapses. When that magnetic field collapses, it generates a very high voltage spark. You go from 12 volts to somewhere around 40,000 volts in the car. That's what makes the spark that lights your fuel at precisely the right time, somewhere around 6 degrees before top dead center, and you get combustion and you can drive your vehicle. Now, all that's done electronically now with electronic ignition because we want to time that very precisely depending on the stoichiometry. That's the mixture of gasoline and air that goes into your combustion chamber. So now you have this explanation. Now you know what these transformers do. They gather electricity and they step it up or step it down, but they are dealing with tremendous amounts of voltage. And if they receive a strong electromagnetic pulse, they take this magnetic pulse and turn it into electricity. And literally, if it overwhelms it, you just melt the core down. You melt the core down of the transformer, and it's done. It has to be replaced. And I don't want to scare you or anything, but we're not talking about a fix that can be done in a few minutes. It's not a matter of going in and replacing the core of a transformer. What you really have to do here is you've got to replace that transformer. Now, there are some spare parts out there, but I've got to tell you, times are hard. Times are hard. People don't have a lot of inventory. Power companies don't have a lot of inventory. They may have a few transformers, one or two, especially the big ones. They're very, very expensive. Those spares will be used up very quickly. Without electricity, the factories can't run that make the transformers to replace the transformers. So you see the problem we're going to have. Somewhere between 4 to 8 years it will take to get the electrical grid back up and running. Now, what makes this 2012 so much different than the other every 11 years that we have this electromagnetic pulse? We had it in 2003. We had 9 X-class flares in a single month, in the month of October. It was devastating to pagers and cell phones, but it was only a minor interruption. Yes, the grid went down all across the Northeast. Some people blamed Enron, but really what it was is this grid being overwhelmed by this electromagnetic pulse and series of X-class flares from the sun. We weren't ready for it. Now, the grid went down, but for some reason, this wasn't really that devastating of a pulse. In other words, the transformers survived. Somehow, even though we were taken by surprise, somehow most of the switchgear survived. Even the satellites had a little minor damage, a few fizzled diodes here and there, but generally things were repairable. What makes this time different than the other times? What makes this 2012 event so much different than the others? Well, the difference is our location in the galaxy. Now, the next piece I'm going to play for you is rather long. I want you to have patience with it. I want you to also begin to write your questions and concerns down. When this piece is done, we'll open the phone lines off planet, 530-413-4511. West of Earth, 530-413-4515. East of Earth, 530-413-4520. And if you want to step away from your computer, you can call us up with your cell phone. We have lots of people that do this. 712-432-0075. 712-432-0075. And then dial the access code 318-116-pound, and you can listen to the entire program by your cell phone. Just hang the Bluetooth over your ear, plug it in. Off we go. All right, here we go. This is going to explain to you why this time is different than all the other times and maybe where we're going to go from here. Here we go. Don't leave your chair.
The year was 2003, with Halloween approaching. 93 million miles away, an angry sun began to vent its rage. Dark regions, called sunspots, appeared unexpectedly on its surface, a sign of rising tension within. It had been 3.5 years since the sun last erupted in fury, at the peak of an 11-year cycle of solar flare-ups. Back then, we got ready for it by shutting down satellites that were vulnerable to high levels of radiation. But no one expected this. In what should have been a low point in solar activity, the sun erupted in a series of massive explosions called coronal mass ejections, or CMEs. Electrified gas clouds weighing billions of tons raced outward. Solar telescopes recorded the action. The largest emission of solar X-rays ever seen. The hottest flares at tens of millions of degrees. And the fastest, reaching speeds clocked in excess of 6 million miles per hour. The sun became a giant plasma weapon, more potent than in any science fiction, and pointed right at our home planet. The Halloween storms produced some of the most spectacular auroras ever seen at the North and South Poles. They also brought jolts of electricity that caused power outages in Sweden and disrupted airline navigation. In space, these storms damaged 28 communication satellites and destroyed 2, and they didn't stop there. As the energetic surge swept past Mars, it was so strong, it burned out the radiation monitor aboard the Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft. Ironically, this instrument was designed to study radiation that human explorers might encounter on future missions beyond Earth. Months later, the rush of solar energy washed over the 2 Voyager spacecraft on their way to the far reaches of the solar system. CMEs like these have been known to blast their way out to the far edges of the solar system, where the solar wind meets the flow of gas moving around the galaxy itself. This stormy season on the sun lasted about 5 weeks, but it was by no means the worst. A solar eruption in 1859 was so powerful it set fire to telegraph offices. Several people got nasty shocks simply because they were working with metal objects. And for the next few nights, auroras were reportedly bright enough to read by. A similar storm today could easily cause more than $2 trillion in damage to our high-tech infrastructure, 20 times greater than Hurricane Katrina. Believe it or not, the threat is about to get even worse. We are beginning to change the way we acquire and use energy by expanding our power grid to accommodate wind farms, solar energy arrays, new nuclear plants, and other renewable sources. This grid will get even larger and smarter, with microprocessors in almost every device, communicating and negotiating with one another, running everything from air conditioners to power plants. A sudden surge of solar activity could strike the grid directly, inflicting a substantial amount of damage on the emerging smart power economy. To understand what a powerful force the sun can be, take a look at Venus. At almost exactly the same size and mass as Earth, it's truly our sister planet. The thinking is that long ago, fierce solar winds stripped off lighter water molecules from its upper atmosphere. What was left was a witch's brew of acidic gases and carbon dioxide that thickened at lower altitudes, rising to some 90 times the density of Earth's atmosphere. At a concentration of 95% in Venus' atmosphere, CO2 gas trapped increasing amounts of sunlight and drove surface temperatures close to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. How did our Earth avoid such a harsh fate? One of the main reasons is that our planet has what Venus lacks, a natural defense against solar attacks. Earth spins around on its axis once every 24 hours. This has an effect on molten iron welling up from deep in its core. It's kind of like the alternator in your car. These plumes of hot metal generate magnetic fields that extend beyond our atmosphere and enshroud the Earth in a protective field. Venus, on the other hand, spins so slowly that one of its days is 243 Earth days long. That's one reason it lacks a strong magnetic field. While Earth's magnetic field may be strong, it's not impenetrable.
What's up, Smart?
Speaking, Smart. Yep.
So what we're talking about here is a solar storm of such magnitude that it would be like the 1859 storm, except that it would have an enhancement, something that 1859 wasn't present, because 150 years ago we were far away from the inductive force that the Mayans predicted. The Maya predicted that we would get close to what's called the galactic plane, the gravitational concentrative plane that surrounds a supermassive spinning black hole in the center of the galaxy. This is why we now have an inductive force that is going to draw this flare, or these CMEs, over the Earth at a much accelerated, much more concentrated velocity and ion density. That's why our own magnetosphere might not be enough. So let's continue.
The sun shoots a CME in our direction, and that blast coincides with Earth's magnetic field. That chain of events is called a geomagnetic storm. Air travelers, whose routes fly near the poles, get a slightly increased dose of radiation, and the crews who fly them often need to keep track of their cumulative exposure. But space travelers are at much greater risk. Earth's atmosphere thins rapidly with increasing altitude. Outside its protective envelope, those living on space stations get twice as much radiation as the rest of us, even when the sun is quiet. When it erupts, as it did in 2003, astronauts and cosmonauts can absorb a whole year's radiation dose in just a couple of hours. With our dependence on computers and electronic communications growing by the day, we have begun to launch a fleet of spacecraft to monitor the sun. Some positioned in low Earth orbit. Others out where our magnetic field meets the solar wind. And even beyond. Data from these satellites are revolutionizing our understanding of the sun and helping scientists predict solar eruptions more accurately than ever before. Solar outbursts get their start deep within the core of the sun. The sun's immense gravity squeezes hydrogen atoms. The pressure and heat rises, causing a fusion reaction in which the hydrogen atoms crash together, merging to form heavier atoms like helium. This process gives off heat, which rises in plumes to the surface of the sun. The SOHO spacecraft can see the result by recording ultraviolet light. It detects a wavy pattern of gas on the sun's surface, along with a super hot halo of gas called the corona. The white regions are places where the rising gas suddenly escapes, forming loops that rise into space and fall back. There are times when this smooth sequence of generating and releasing energy gets bottled up by a magnetic field spun off by the sun's spinning turbulent core. Using data from the sun's exterior, scientists have modeled these fields as they erupt all around the sun's surface. These field lines twist and loop around, while heat rising from the sun's core follows these lines toward the surface. The magnetic fields can also stifle them. That's where sunspots form. Where the surface is relatively cool, below, the heat and pressure begin to build. SOHO's detectors have managed to catch the moment when the energy is suddenly released. A shockwave travels rapidly outward, like a solar tsunami. These waves stay on the surface of the sun as they travel around it, but they are a sign of what's about to happen. They signal the start of a coronal mass ejection, or CME, a massive eruption of particles in hot gas. Using a coronagraph to block out the bright light of the sun, you can see how violent our star can get. If you see a CME spreading out in all directions from behind this artificial eclipse, you'll know that satellites and power systems on Earth are gonna get hit hard. Especially if that scintillating cloud of bulk plasma is weighted in the direction of where Earth will be in its orbit in about 24 to 36 hours. Whether it's a light solar breeze or a titanic coronal mass ejection, the sun sends a wave of energetic particles crashing into Earth's magnetic field. When the energy builds to a critical threshold, hordes of charged particles move out along field lines, wrapping around the Earth, and finally flowing in. When these charged particles are channeled and concentrated around Earth's poles, suddenly, with a snap like an electric arc, they'll induce huge jolts of strong current, strong enough to wreck spacecraft and burn power stations on the ground. Or these charges can simply dazzle observers with a silent, awe-inspiring light show. Waves of charged particles sneak through in the far north and south. Creating colorful curtains of light called auroras. The magnificent aurora borealis in the northern hemisphere and the gorgeous aurora australis in the south. But as lovely a light show as this is, it means there are kilovolts of electricity in the air, looking for places to get to ground. And as more and more of the ground around Earth gets carpeted with conductive metal, the chances are that all that juice will fry something vital to humanity. In one important sense, though, the impact of solar outbursts goes beyond electrical and computer systems. Scientists recently found that the sun's moodiness can change the course of our global climate. When additional solar radiation beats down on the tropical ocean, it raises evaporation rates. With more clouds and rain, the trade winds that circle the equator begin to pick up. You can see the effects in a map of ocean temperatures drawn from satellite data. In the Pacific Ocean, off the coast of South America, Brisk offshore winds cause cold water to well up from the deep. This so-called La Niña spreads cool, dry air into North America, while sending a river of cold water racing across the Pacific.
This is what generates the amount of storm activity that we often see in the Gulf of Mexico. Sometimes, as in the last couple years since 2005, the Gulf is rather calm and these storms can be rather benign, a tropical storm here, a tropical storm there. This year, in 2010, 5 years after Katrina, we are beginning to see those same cold water currents come forward. We are beginning to see the Gulf of Mexico be able to generate these kinds of storms.
La Niña gets, the stronger will be its counterpart, El Niño. Inevitably, the warm water returns with a vengeance, giving rise to drought and heavy rains in remote parts of the world, while turning portions of the ocean lifeless. Of course, solar outbursts have been affecting Earth's climate for billions of years. But what's different now is that their effects are superimposed on other effects brought on by human-caused global climate change. That increases the challenges that we face in adjusting to our changing world. Fortunately, our ability to monitor and predict the sun's behavior is getting better. Scientists are, for example, learning to read the wavy surface of the sun, to anticipate sunspots forming on the side we can't see, to detect the presence of these sun storms months before they can affect us. But for those which do escape our notice, a Themis mission was launched to find out how and when the solar wind can threaten us. Four separate spacecraft are now orbiting the globe, flying wide loops through Earth's magnetic field. What they've found is a turbulent zone where energy from the solar wind builds. They are looking for the break points when a solar attack becomes inevitable. The Halloween storms of 2003 were a wake-up call. They showed just how vulnerable to solar outbursts our modern society has become. And just since then, many more of us have opted for GPS boxes in our cars. We've run hundreds of miles of new, delicate broadband internet lines into our houses. And we've tucked expensive smartphones in our pockets. Again and again, even in what we thought was the least active phase of the solar cycle, the sun still went from quiescent and calm to downright angry. Yes, solar storm reporting has gotten better, thanks to improvements in our global communications. And yes, we do have more eyes in the sky staring at the sun. But we are still a long way from being able to predict the solar weather. We are in, it seems, a race with the sun. Is more vulnerable to solar outbursts. That technology has also now begun to help us evade them.
Well, I know there's a lot of talk about evading these kinds of things. But I can tell you that Earth is revolving around the sun, and we really don't have a lot of choice about that. We can't move Earth out of the way. And And we are making space preparations to give us maximum warning. But every one of these devices that we just talked about, these satellites, our cell phones, our iPods, our GPS units, all of the electronics that control the flow of water and electricity and traffic and money and commerce and information, all of these devices will suffer damage and may possibly be destroyed. Only DC devices that are shielded and not in operation at the time of the solar pulse might be saved. If we have, as they say, 24 hours, 72 hours, maybe 73 hours of warning, if some of these particles are going at the speed of 1 million miles an hour, that's basically 93 hours, and it's going to be right on top of us. Usually it's a little faster than that, but the crescent, the crescendo, the main power of these geomagnetic storms usually comes a short time later. This is the event that was predicted by the Maya, this alignment with the supermassive spinning black hole in the center of the galaxy is exactly what the Maya predicted. This was the event that was etched in Pakal's tomb lid. We discuss it very, very clearly in the Arc of Millions of Years, and we go over it again in the Planet Updates of Volume 4, which just went to the printer. It should be available in a few weeks for you, so you can read about it. These are the space preparations that are being made to give us maximum warning. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with respect to this alignment with the galaxy. Because this is what makes it different. This is what makes this time different than all the other times. This is why it isn't such a pleasant thing that we sing about the sun, we realize the wonderful bounty and life that the sun provides us, and we sing about it, we talk about the beauty of the sun, the things that it does for our lives. It is basically the giver of all life on the earth, and we've relied upon it. It's what makes our solar system different, the age of our sun, the radiation that our sun puts off, the fact that water is liquid upon our planet, the fact that we can go outside without any personal protective equipment. We don't have to wear reflective suits. We don't have to wear special glasses. We can, you know, take raw exposure to the sunlight. And this is what is unique about our planet. Other planets in the solar system, as we listened about Venus, we listened about Mars, they don't have this kind of protection, and they do suffer terribly anytime these storms happen on the sun. Earth is somewhat protected. Earth has been able to survive. And I use that word loosely because, you know, the fact that we survive on the Earth, we don't prosper on the Earth when these things happen. Several times, mankind in the zenith of its career and the zenith of its power and life and glory, we fall. We have a tendency to go back to rubbing two sticks together to make fire. We lose the glory of our society. And we have to start all over again. So how much this solar event this event will reach this magnitude of destruction force, how it's going to affect us, what it does to us as a people, what it does to us and our mindset and our process of being human and being social. My good friend and colleague Brent Miller and I worked on a project called the Horizon Project. This is not an excerpt from that project, but it's something we were working on, and I want to bring this to your attention because this is what really makes this particular event different. This alignment of the Earth with the Sun and the rift in the Milky Way, which we know is aligned with this supermassive spinning black hole in the center of the galaxy, is what makes it different. This is the piece I'm going to play for you.
Compact energy source of enormous strength to stabilize the orbits of stars contained within them. The engine, which drives the direction of rotation and shape of each galaxy, consists of what astrophysicists refer to as a supermassive black hole. located in the direct center. The central black hole, located within our galaxy, contains an estimated mass of over 1 trillion stars and is believed to be over 2 trillion miles in diameter. Many leading astro and quantum physicists also believe that supermassive black holes spin at an unbelievably high rate due to their overwhelming mass. At this high rate of spin, the black hole's projected gravitational field is no longer spherical, but rather flattens out to form a massive yet extremely thin spinning disk. Our galactic plane can easily be identified by even the untrained eye. As one views the shape and characteristics of our own galaxy from images provided by the Hubble telescope and projected computer simulations, we can easily see that all matter moves and is formed around this flattened gravitational influence.
This also explains why all galaxies are flat and circular. If you look at our own galaxy, there exists a dark band which shows you where this gravitational plane is located, where galactic dust and mass has been collecting since the birth of the galaxy. This is where we can easily see the location of the galactic plane, which is what modern science refers to as the galactic equinox.
But what does this have to do with humanity's future? Milky Way, which is an active galaxy, our solar system cyclically moves above and below this galactic plane. As stars and planetary systems, including our own, approach this galactic plane, the gravitational influence increases, which disturbs the stability of each planet, including Earth. The passage through the densest portion of the gravitational plane is the direct cause of the devastating cycles and pole shifts that we see recorded throughout Earth's history. This cyclic nature of our solar system as we move through the Milky Way is precisely how many ancient civilizations based their calendar systems. The Mayans themselves describe what they refer to as the Dark Rift, or the galactic plane, in ways eerily similar to those of modern scientists and physicists. The Mayans state that the end of each age, which brings about worldwide devastation, is defined by the world sitting on the dark rift. Even though the Mayans don't clearly present the science behind why the galactic plane causes severe implications upon Earth's stability in modern terminology, it is very clear that we are talking about the same event, an event where the Earth passes through the galactic equinox, the dark rift, or the central plane. It all refers to the cyclic and destructive gravitational influence created by the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. Researchers and scientists agree that we are indeed approaching the end of what the Mayans define as the current age. Even though many science groups are still debating the full implications of what passing through the galactic plane will have upon Earth, we have already begun to see the early stages that the increased gravitational influence is having upon our world and other planets in the solar system. As we approach the gravitational plane, we will continue to experience severe weather and ecological effects such as earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, and volcanic activity with increased frequency and intensity. As we penetrate the densest portion of the galactic plane and experience the full gravitational effects, we may witness unprecedented solar flares, unexpected meteor showers, and one or more geographical pole shifts. Subsequently, unexpected celestial objects may pass through the solar system, as they too are influenced by the gravitational plane. This may account for the ancient records describing several past worldwide catastrophes accompanied by passing bodies, comets, or what some researchers today refer to as Planet X.
Utilizing the latest in research data, we can speculate that due to the overwhelming rate of spin and the generated gravitational field, the galactic plane or gravitational disk could relatively be paper thin, requiring Earth, with our current speed of movement through the galaxy, only a few years to completely pass through this plane, experiencing the full effect upon Earth's stability. If this data is correct, could this be what the Bible refers to as the 7 years of tribulation, in which the Earth undergoes a series of devastating global catastrophes which result in the death of billions?
One thing is for sure. The ancients endured several worldwide catastrophes that all but erased their civilizations from the face of the earth. Their clues, structural remains, and records have attempted to warn us and prepare us for the reoccurrence of this cyclic event. Warnings that so far humanity has ignored. Though modern researchers have a general time frame, we are still unable to pinpoint the exact year in which we will begin passing through the galactic plane. So even though the telltale signs are already evident throughout our world, how can it be known for sure when you should be bracing for tomorrow?
Computer simulations utilizing the collection of knowledge we have amassed through decades of galactic models and satellite data tells us that our solar system will definitely begin passing through the galactic plane in the very near future. The most severe effects that will cause worldwide devastation and a pole shift are most likely to occur beginning sometime between the years 2008 and 2015.
So that basically gives us a 7-year window. And my good friend Brent Miller is the producer of that. We worked on the kill shot and the other one that we talked about, the pole shift. The link to these films, if you want to see them for yourself in a full length, are on X Squared Radio. Just go down to the bottom. You'll see the links there. There are three films there that make up the series, and I believe the one that we're talking about, the pole shift here, we're going to reproduce that one later on this year or early next year. These are some of the pieces that came from that production. The alignment of Earth with the Sun and the rift in the Milky Way is the key to the perfect storm. Now, this is the wake-up call, okay? This is what's going to happen in space. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk about what's going to happen on Earth. This is where the rubber meets the road, people, and there are preparations being made. We're going to tell you what those are right after we come back. Don't go away. More X Squared Radio right after this. All right, welcome back to X Squared Radio. A little bit of Muse and Uprising there. If you want to be part of the program this hour, I would more than welcome your questions and observations. 530-413-4511, anywhere off planet. 530-413-4515, west of Earth. 530-413-4520, east of Earth. And by the way, if you want to get out away from your computer a little bit, you can reach us by cell phone. Join us. Hang your Bluetooth over your lobe there and take a walk. 712-432-0075. 712-432-0075. Then dial the access code 318-116-POUND. By the way, we're talking about the events of 2012 relative to Earth changes and space changes and why the position of the Earth in this part of the galaxy is going to make the events surrounding our relationship with the sun much more devastating than in 1859, more devastating than in 2003, although it can be said we had a lot of microelectronics, advanced aircraft, power handling systems, and there was some loss. We didn't experience an electronic extinction event, but that's because we were nowhere near this galactic plane that we are right now. Now, you heard Brent in his piece there preparing for this new remake of this film called The Horizon Project. He was talking about the fact that this plane might be paper thin. That's relatively speaking. We're not talking about something as thin as real paper. We're talking about a band of gravity that could be so thin it will only take Earth maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years to get into the apex of it and then head out of it. The Bible talks about 7 years of tribulation. This could be it. Who knows? You know, it's aligning with this kind of future prediction. We have not experienced it yet, and maybe this could be it. But one thing is for sure. As we line up with this galactic plane, we do know that particles are drawn along this at very high velocity. It ripples space-time. It also exposes us to all kinds of new frequencies. It exposes flesh and DNA and consciousness. It also exposes electronics and all of the programs that run on those electronics to those frequencies, and it can have its effect. Now, before we get into this next segment, I want to sort of give you a warning that this is not really meant to alarm you. It's meant to empower you, okay? This is not a conspiracy theorist show. These are facts. These are direct observations. The things that I'm going to show you or play for you in this hour, you can verify for yourself. These are real, live reports that are done out there, and they make sense. And they, you often hear me say on this program, just follow the money. We're following not millions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of preparations that are taking place here. And what we're going to outline in this hour is part of those preparations. Before we get into it, let's go ahead and talk to Mark from Wisconsin. Welcome to the program, Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you just fine. Welcome to the program.
Okay. I was just curious. When you were talking about shielding from the solar flares for certain types of devices, such as DC-operated devices, for instance.
Right, right.
What kind of shielding is it?
Well, you're going to have to use either gold or you're going to have to use copper. Aluminum will not do it. Too porous. Now, the reason DC might work is we're not talking about we're talking about high current, and we're not talking about devices that are designed to take alternating current, because this is a DC kind of energy pulse that comes through, and what happens is it goes into these step up and step down electronics, and it charges it up, not unlike the coil of a car. And when it discharges, we're talking about, you know, small lightning bolts in the realm of millions of volts with thousands of amps behind it, and it literally turns into a welder. DC electronics, we don't use transformers like that unless we're trying to step up from, say, 12 volts to 200 volts. Then what we do is we chop that DC and create a quasi-AC circuit. Then we use a transformer to step up the voltage, and then we use a rectifier to turn that back into DC. So we can step up, say, 12 volts to 200 volts or 185 volts by using a DC to AC to DC circuit. Those circuits may be damaged as well. But we're talking about strictly DC circuits. Yes, you're going to get a little bit of arcing, but it's probably going to survive.
Okay. So it really isn't, from what I'm gathering here, practical to try to shield a home, for instance, and then unplug, if you know, your appliances or shut the power off.
If you have that kind of warning, I would unplug those devices because the transformers that are inside, say, something like a microwave where you're stepping up voltage and frequency are probably not large enough in with enough wire to pick up that much energy and cause damage. What we're talking about are the transformers that exist at the substation not far from your house. So you're going to go from, or the transformers on the pole. You're talking about going from 110 volts to something like 110,000 volts. Then you're talking about real serious damage coming through the outlets of your home. So not like a, not unlike a very long lightning strike. So it would make a lot of sense to disconnect those devices.
So I guess what I'm looking for is what kind of advice can you give people to help shield and protect their home? It sounds like you would have a fire in your house from electrical wires running through your walls with that type of voltage and amperage arcing, and you would have sparks flying, overheated wires.
I would probably go as far as to throw the main on the house and disconnect it from the meter altogether.
Okay, and that's about it that a person can do that's within practical means?
I would say that's the most practical thing to do, just to, you know, go to your breaker box. Usually it's the very top disconnect there. If it's not there, then it's outside, you know, right before the meter, you'll see a pretty large fuse box with a handle on the side. Just, you know, flip that thing up and disconnect the primary from your breaker panel, and that will disconnect your house from the voltage. Even if it jumps that gap, it's not going to do it with enough current to probably hurt anything in your house. If you've got a lot of wire in your house, like I built a house one time, it had about 3 miles of wire in it. Yeah, maybe it is enough antenna to pick up that energy and route it around the house, but not nearly as much as there is going down the highway from the substation to your house. That's the one that's going to pick up the voltage.
Okay. No, I was just trying to find practical ways of protecting a home that the average person can do if it looks like we're going to have one whopper of a solar flare coming this way.
Well, and hopefully we have enough warning. You know, hopefully, you know, when it happens, we still have enough working electronics that get on the news and say, okay, go throw a main on your house. But these are things to kind of be ready for. And, you know, we used to practice this stuff when I had small kids at home. We would shut off the power, you know, one day every other month, and we'd go 24 hours with no power just so the kids and us wouldn't panic. If we did have some kind of an outage, we'd still have, you know, water stored up and still be able to cook on the camp stove in the backyard and that kind of stuff. We made it fun, and it was good practice.
Yeah, okay. What about phone lines, for instance, coming into a home? Cable TV or, you know, the accessory wires that you have, should those all be disconnected as well?
Yes. Yes, it should be. I've lost many a good modem. In fact, in 2003, lost a dial-up modem because from that flare, power came in on the phone line, didn't damage the computer. The computer was fine, but the modem was fried. It picked up that pulse out on the phone line. I had a dial-up modem. I was in the boonies, and it came right in on the phone line and cooked that board.
Wow. Wow. What about automobiles? Today's modern cars are full of computers and other electronic equipment. Would one of these really nasty solar flares perhaps disable automobiles?
That is a really good question. I come from the industry. I can tell you that the cars are susceptible to EMP. Some of these cars have 5, 6, and now with electronic shifting transmissions, 7 computers in the cars, and they are susceptible to this kind of stuff. Now, they run on what's called an EEPROM. This is kind of a burned chip, a mass-produced chip. The program is burned into the chip. It's not downloaded into the chip. So a lot of these chips are not programmable. Some of them are. And they are subject to that kind of interference. Now, that's a big worry, that we have a lot of cars. Most of the cars on the road have these advanced computer chips in them, especially emergency vehicles like ambulances and fire engines and police cars. They are going to be disabled. In fact, for years, I kept an old points-style distributor in one of my toolboxes in the garage and a coil so that if this ever did happen and my electronic ignition was fried, I could drop the old breaker points-style distributor into the vehicle and be able to drive.
Hmm. Most people can't do that, though, but that sounds like a great idea. I would imagine the older cars that didn't have the electronic ignition and things would probably survive that quite well then.
Yeah, and it's not so much that. It's the fuel injection. Even cars that are carbureted will work as long as you can get that that points-style distributor dropped into it. Most of American-made cars, you can just drop the old style distributor right into it, and it'll run right off the cam just like it always did, and it'll work just fine. But fuel-injected vehicles, I'm afraid you're out of luck, because all those fuel mixture problems with the oxygen sensors and everything are all run by computer. I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is, you know, we used to think about this from a thermonuclear point of view before the wall came down, and even after the wall came down, the threat of rogue terrorism with a nuclear weapon, we just kind of thought you'd wake up one morning late because your alarm didn't go off, and you know, realize that you have to go out try to start your car, wouldn't start. You know, that's basically how everyone would know that a nuclear weapon has gone off within 500 miles of their home. But now we realize that it might not be man that causes this event. It might be our good friend the sun that causes it. And the fact that we're in this neighborhood now is going to make it that much more intense.
Yeah, it sounds like exciting times coming up. Thank you, Brooks.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much for the phone call. So before we get into this segment, Earth Explorers, I do want to let you know that one of our affiliates, and believe me, we searched long and hard for this affiliate. I have been through over 30 emergency preparedness companies, California, Utah, Arizona, Iowa, all over the place. No company presented the kind of preparation that this company did. Founded by a firefighter and an EMT, well-funded, well-backed, very well organized, 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. You can call them or you can just go to their website. Now, I have found that their packages are very reasonably priced. You get a 3-day kit for 2 people for $49. Some of it has free shipping. You get everything that you need. This stuff will last for 25 years. You don't have to do a thing but put the book bag in your front closet, and when times get bad, just grab the bag, head out the door. You've got everything you need. You can also put together a storage and emergency preparedness kit for a family of 4 for less than $200. Really, people, as we go through this, I don't want you to be alarmed. I'm not using this as an infomercial. I'm trying to help empower you so that you can take care of yourselves without having to be a burden upon the emergency preparedness staff, either the local National Guard or the local police or local emergency crews, and heaven forbid, FEMA. So grab something to drink because we're getting ready to head into this 30-minute segment. You won't want to miss this. Make sure your seatbelt's fastened, and we will be back in 40 seconds with this piece. You won't want to miss it. Trust me. Be right back.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness.
When these events take place, there will need to be an existing infrastructure to handle large numbers of people who are displaced. Now, I'm not talking about the rural areas. I'm not talking about, you know, southern Georgia or the rural parts of Tennessee or Kentucky or farmlands in Indiana. I'm talking about the cities. I'm talking about Cincinnati, New York, L.A., Phoenix. I'm talking about the good-sized cities. There will be a need to prevent mass migrations. Now, many of you have no idea what I'm talking about, but I was raised in Southern California, and I remember in 1969 we had an earthquake. Now, you remember the movie Earthquake, the original one? You remember those towering inferno, blah, 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 earthquake? That earthquake. I was in that earthquake. That earthquake woke me up. Living on 12th Street in Santa Monica in 1969. I can tell you that you can run from a fire. You can get to higher ground in a flood. You can go to a basement for a tornado. But when an earthquake happens, there's nothing you can do except jump up in the air and stay there. And when this earthquake took place, there were aftershocks for days. Now, to give you an idea how really devastating this quake was, yes, we had collapsed freeways. Yes, we had automobile-sized gas bubbles coming up out of the ocean just offshore. We had a rip take place on the beach where the sand was like 6-foot drop. Oh, it's smoothed out over the years now. But it really did happen. And out in the valley, we had several million people living out there in the suburbs, and they were cut off because the freeway had collapsed. Now, in 8 hours, people get a little nervous. They've got some water stored, they got a little bit of food in the fridge, but the lights are out. It doesn't take long before the food that's preserved in the freezer goes bad. Then you start breaking into the canned goods. And you can't just go down to the local grocery and buy because everybody else in the valley has exactly the same idea. And so the Red Cross moves in and seals off that local grocery store. And they're backed up by local police. And they're backed up by local National Guard. So within 24 hours, people realize that, you know what, this might not be over in a couple days. I think I'm going to get out of the valley here and go over to Grandma's house over in Ventura, or I'm going to slide on south to Fontana or something, and guess what? You can't move because the National Guard has sealed off the freeway. Why? Because they can't let a million people out of that valley to go burden another emergency service in another part of the metro. So they keep you where you are. And in 72 hours, they're starting to haul water in and haul ice in. And they're starting to worry about crime and illness and cholera and those kinds of things. The main thing to do when you have a disaster like this is to prevent mass migration. Now, what you are about to hear is the audio to a video that was filmed at a vacant factory in Indiana. This is important because there are many of these facilities. So this is typical. It is not unique. I can tell you by the number of views of this video that not many of you know about this out there. Okay? So I want you to listen closely to the narrated video of this because this is typical of what is out there. And I promise you, you won't want to miss this. If you're not a member of the archives of either BBS Radio or X Squared Radio, I suggest that you pony up, because you're going to want to listen to this again. Here we go. Pay close attention.
Prison American citizens have generated a lot of interest around the country in locating the potential prison camps throughout the country. These may be facilities currently being used as prisons, such as those you saw earlier, or prisons that are being built supposedly in the name of the war on drugs, or facilities that have other uses but which could be quickly used to detain large numbers of people, such as this Amtrak facility in Beech Grove, Indiana. We're standing now in the main parking lot, which doesn't look too sinister. At this level, it is a very large parking lot, fenced on all sides by fence topped by barbed wire. It also has these electronically operated turnstiles. There is also a surveillance camera, just like we saw at the FEMA facility, pointing out to the parking lot, and a helicopter windsock. All of these apparent security measures are particularly unusual here, because this is a very low crime area, and this facility is nothing but an old train repair station with nothing in it worth stealing. In this portion of the parking lot is a brick building, suitable for processing, next to a gate that leads right out to the railroad tracks, and all of this is contained inside a fully fenced area, now three layers deep in fencing at this point. This U.S. Air Force train indicates federal and military involvement. Facing the opposite direction, you can see that this area, too, is a very large fenced area with railroad track running the length of the fence and plenty of warehouses. This facility was supposed to have closed in June of 1993, yet instead, several million dollars in federal funds have been spent on supposed renovations over the past 2 years. Helicopter windsocks and markers are evident throughout the property. This small building is the only way into a particular fenced area. Inside this building, we see more of the motion-activated detectors, electronic turnstiles, and prison bars. All of the renovations to this property have involved putting in new fencing, electronic turnstiles, concrete flooring in unused warehouse buildings, and putting in large gas furnaces on buildings that were never heated any time in the past 20 years.
Now, I want to let you know that these gas furnaces are not giant ovens. They are incinerators, regular electronic eye-fired and controlled Burl robot incinerators. These are designed to eliminate waste. Usually, I'm not saying in this particular case, but usually these kinds of incinerators are used to take care of hazardous waste or biological waste. So I just want to let you know they're not giant ovens, they're just incinerators. We'll continue.
Outside this building is fencing and a cattle run section of fence, all topped by barbed wire, pointing inward, not to keep people out, but to keep people in. This was common throughout the facility, particularly the new fencing that had been erected. Inside the fenced area on the other side of the building, you'll see signs that say Red Zone, right up next to the railroad tracks that run the length of the fenced area. Next to the Red Zone sign, you can see closely numbered markers on the fences that are too closely spaced to be parking markers, just as if they plan to have people line up to board the trains. Here's a helicopter marker on the power lines outside the facility, indicating expected helicopter traffic, and again, another tall radio antenna. Looking around, you can get an idea of how huge this place is and how many people it could contain in its fenced-in area. In yet another fenced area, we see a large warehouse building at the end, with the electronic turnstiles in front of it. The building is one that has a new concrete floor, and its doors and windows have all been blocked. Outside, there are new gas pipes. Even as we were filming, a black helicopter flew over us, observing what we were doing, which has happened many times when we have been at the facility. The gas lines and gas pipes at the facility run the length of the buildings. And come out at some very, very large, brand new furnaces that have been installed at the buildings throughout the facility.
So as you can see, we go through the audio of this video. It's a little difficult for you to see what I see. This is probably a 1.5 million square foot facility. It used to be an old train repair station, not a train station, not where people would come and get on a train, but where train locomotives and wheels might be brought in for repair. It's a large facility, and it is not alone. There are facilities in Tennessee, in Kentucky, in Arizona, and these facilities are being refurbished. What are they being refurbished into? Well, it looks like they're being refurbished into facilities designed to process large numbers of people. And I mean large numbers of displaced people, okay? In Georgia, Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arizona, they're sitting idle right now. Billions of dollars in federal funding and the use of military trains, trucks, and helicopters have been used with civilian contractors to build these facilities. Now, I should let you know that the paychecks are the checks that go to the landowners where some of this property is leased are being written under the Centers for Disease Control out of Atlanta. It is evident that these facilities are being designed to process people and not animals. It is evident that they are being designed to accommodate biological waste with incinerators and with hundreds of thousands of polypropylene coffins distributed around the country. Hundreds of thousands of them, millions of them. The storage land is leased by the Centers for Disease Control. Now, the methods for handling masses of quarantined people are the same for handling masses of migratory and displaced people. The same methods have been employed in the past for four wars in which the U.S. has been involved. We did it in World War I. We did it during the Civil War. We did it during World War II, and we're doing it again. There is a way we can avoid this personally, but preparations for masses of unprepared people are being made. And since you're listening to this program, you are no longer uninformed. So the choice is yours whether you're going to be prepared or not be prepared. Now, you might be wondering if this is a conspiracy. It's not. We talked about some of the space-based preparations that are being made. We talked about the Themis probes that have been put together and put into place. We talked about the solar observatories, not the least of which is SOHO, and now the new SDO. Both are designed to watch the sun very carefully, all the time. We have staff of grad students and somewhat better paid. Of course, it wouldn't have to be much over minimum wage to be better paid than a grad student. Staff that are watching the output of these satellites all the time. Government knows, NASA knows, leadership knows that we are getting close to something in the galaxy, that the sun is probably the source of whatever this disaster is going to be, this cataclysm is going to be. We've talked about it in our books. We've talked about it on this program. You might be wondering if this has been addressed by the mainstream press. Make no mistake, Earth Explorers, these exist. And believe it or not, mainstream press is talking about it. Just to give you an example, we'll play a little bit here of what's going on with the likes of Glenn Beck even talking about it on Fox News. All right, are you ready? This is about these Federal Emergency Management Administration camps, just like the one you just heard described on the audio of a videotape of one of these facilities in Indiana. This is how high this investigation has got, and how close attention you need to pay to it. Here we go.
Camps are rumored to be set up here in America under FEMA.
This is Wiggins, Mississippi, near the military base Camp Shelby.
But rumor has it they are really for the American people once martial law is initiated. Glenn Beck made these FEMA camps a topic of interest in the following clip. And then after making the statement that he could not debunk the story of the camps like he originally intended, he then does a 360 in his story. I wonder what changed his mind so quickly.
He means a 180.
We don't understand freedom anymore. We are a country that is headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination. I have to tell you, I'm doing a story tonight.
All right, before we go any further, this may have nothing to do with socialism or totalitarianism. I've got to tell you, I may not agree with Glenn Beck here. We're not talking about a political takeover. We're not talking about a government that's trying to take over its people. That's conspiracy theory junk, I think. What we're talking about is a very real cataclysm that takes place between Earth and another body in our solar system, namely the Sun. And also, the galactic plane of the galaxy. These might be preparations to help organize handling masses of displaced people during this disaster. So, the rest of what Glenn is going to say is pretty accurate. So, here we go.
That I wanted to debunk these FEMA camps. I'm tired of hearing. You know about them?
Sure.
I'm tired of hearing. I wanted to debunk them. Well, we've now for several days done research on them. I can't debunk them. And we're going to carry the story tonight.
I don't know anything about them.
Sorry. It is our government. If you trust our government, it's fine. If you have any kind of fear that we might be headed towards a totalitarian state, look out. Buckle up. There's something going on in our country that is... ain't good.
All right. Something else you're going to talk about coming up next.
I know. I wanted to talk
Gretchen,
about
Gretchen, do not get on. Stay on the table.
Okay. What happened here is Ducey tried to redirect the comment to another area because, you know, they're on a fast pace on Fox and Friends in the morning, and they try to go from one story to another. But occasionally they have Glenn Beck in, and as you know, Glenn Beck's kind of a self-made commentator. He's not a politician. He's not a highly educated person as far as affiliated education. He's self-educated. He's obviously done a wonderful job on his radio program and also does a great job on his television program. But now he's talking about this preparation that's being made around the country, these FEMA camps. Now, he's heard about them. He's investigated them. And now he can't debunk them. And so he's about ready to talk about it on mainstream news. Now, I agree that he is talking about this from the standpoint of an out-of-control government. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. In fact, I would rather not subscribe to that. I don't really think we have a government in that form. I think we have a loose coalition of bureaucracies that just happen to get along because they're sharing the same checkbook right now. I just don't think there's that kind of leadership in the country. I think these are preparations which are designed as contingency plans. But the idea that they're talking about it, the idea that it has reached this level of discussion, I don't want you to pay too much attention to this totalitarian speech. I want you to pay close attention to the level of preparation in these camps. Here we go.
What? Name the monster in the dark and have no fear. There are more of us than there are of them. We just have to be honest and open about
right.
these
things. Right, and guess what? Our new Secretary of State just went and shook the hands of another voice of evil, and that is Syria. Who have never come clean on killing the...
Name evil. Stop. America has got to stand up.
But how does this relate to...
He's apocalyptic, too.
How does that relate to the FEMA trailers?
Okay, so the FEMA... They're not FEMA trailers. FEMA prisons. FEMA camps. These are actual prisons that were built under the Bush administration. And they were built specifically for a couple of reasons. One was for a massive influx of illegal immigrants that we would have to jail. Now, they're sitting there empty. If you've got a problem in California, why aren't we using those?
But
why are we using those?
That's FEMA, Federal Emergency. What's that have to do with immigration?
Yeah.
That's an I word.
It's an odd thing. It has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting here and we're actually considering not enforcing our law yet again in California. Here are people who are taken off the streets, mm-hmm. violent criminals, some of them, and we're just going to dump them back into the streets. California is absolutely out of control. You want to see your future, America. If we continue to do this, just look to California. Because that's...
Well, that's a good point. I understand that point. If you want to know what your future is, just look to California. And that's what we're going to do. Not in the sense that we're super paranoid about where our government's going. But think about it. Think about it for a minute. If we really are headed toward these kinds of cataclysmic times in our galaxy, if we really are heading toward these kinds of effects with this kind of power, there are three things that you will need in order to keep the nation together. You're going to handle large amounts of people. You're going to have to care for them somehow, okay? You're going to have to provide them water. You're going to have to provide them shelter. You're going to have to provide them medical care. That's not going to happen with house calls. You're not going to be living that way if you're relying upon those organizations for your support. So there are three things that you will need to avoid being placed in one of these FEMA camps. You'll need food. You'll need to be able to grow your own food. But until you can plant, you'll have to live. So you're going to need a few months of food stored so you can last until your crops come out of the ground. Now, this could be a small garden. An acre or less can easily support a small family. If you're going to try to get together as a community, go out in the middle of nowhere, up in the mountains, out in the desert, you can do that. But you're going to need a little bit more land, and you're going to need a little bit more time. You're also going to need water. You'll need a well and the ability to filter that water. I highly recommend a ceramic filter, and an activated carbon charcoal filter. You can buy both very cheaply and very easily right now. You can find them anywhere for now while the camps are empty and the stores are full and still functioning. The third thing is that you'll need to defend yourself, because if you have, and there are others who have not, typically in this nation is usually the victim that gets taken advantage of. Now, I'm not recommending guns, but I can tell you that there has long been a rumor that Congress would try to take away your guns. I can tell you right now, irrefutably, you could mark this down in stone if you want. That is utter nonsense. It won't happen. It won't happen in 1,000 years. But that doesn't mean they won't try to outlaw ammunition. The plan is even more insidious and slippery than you can imagine. It goes something so simple, something to take you completely off guard. But you remember what Glenn said. If you want to see the future, you look to California and see what they're doing. The plan is to ban the lead. The lead that's used in the ammunition. And the strategy is to use an endangered species to end the use of lead to make bullets. You don't believe me? Here we go. You're gonna love this. This is a guy who is trying to tell the world that we need to ban lead-based ammunition to save the Condor.
James Berkman with NRDC. There are two items I'd like to address here. The first is the need for a comprehensive solution that addresses all forms of lead ammunition, including depredation kills and the taking of upland birds and small mammals. As was previously mentioned, there is no question that depredation is a significant source of lead ammunition exposure to condors, but we haven't heard a lot about the risks of the shooting of upland birds, which also threaten condors. Most raptor species, in fact, eat upland birds, including bald eagles, golden eagles, turkey vultures, and numerous species of hawks. Upland birds represent a significant risk factor to condors as well, although it would be difficult or impossible to detect bird remains in condor nests because bird bones are even lighter and thinner than small mammal remains. But no one has suggested why condors would forage on small mammals, which they do, but not on upland birds. In addition, NRDC urges the Commission to adopt regulations that would require non-lead ammunition for hunting not only in the condor range, but statewide. The benefits of this would be, one, to protect other wildlife, two, because it would make enforcement easier, and three, there would also be a benefit to public health for humans who eat wild game by preventing exposure to lead-tainted meat. The second concern I wanted to address on this agenda item is related to timing in the condor. This is an informational hearing, and you've heard lots of new information, including details surrounding the recent death of condor number 245 in this August. All of this points to one conclusion, that immediate action is still required to protect condors. Most of today's commissioners were not around when NRDC and other groups filed a petition more than 2 years ago asking for emergency action to protect condors. No action was taken at that time, so last year, NRDC and other groups filed a lawsuit to protect condors, which is still ongoing. Although we appreciate the Commission's serious consideration of these issues today, still, condors are being poisoned on a routine basis. We therefore urge the Commission to use its authority under Fish and Game Code Sections 220 and or 240 to take action as expeditiously as possible by scheduling an emergency or special hearing as soon as possible to implement regulations related to the condor in advance of the normal regulation cycle.
So you have James Berkland with the NRDC, with the California Fish and Game Commission, asking for emergency summary legislation that would allow them to ban lead-based ammunition. This is how it's done, people. Most hunters have a gun just fine, but they don't stock a lot of ammunition. This is how slippery the slope might be. Hundreds of thousands of these gun owners do not own more than 20 rounds of ammo. They have guns, sure, but they don't own hundreds of rounds of ammo. It's extremely difficult. It is difficult to own large amounts of ammo these days. You have to sign for it. You have to give a fingerprint for it. The background check includes a fingerprint check. Governor Schwarzenegger has been talking about how many gang members and criminals have been apprehended, their houses have been confiscated, their cars, all their weapons, all their cash, everything confiscated because they went into a gun store, they went to a gun show, and they tried to buy ammunition, and their fingerprint showed up in the database, and they were apprehended. Even law-abiding citizens, if you sign up for this ammo, they're going to have your address, your phone number, your license number, your Social Security number, and your fingerprints. So it won't be the guns that they come after. It will be the ammunition. The lead is impossible to stop, however, because ordinary fishing weights and wheel weights, the things that are used to balance your tires, can be melted in a common frying pan and molded using an ordinary mold to cast your own bullets. The thing that cannot be duplicated easily is the primer for these reloading experts. All of that reloading equipment will be outlawed. The primers will be outlawed. Possession of a primer or reloading equipment will be considered contraband and seen as an act of terrorism. So you be careful how you store your ammo, okay? It's too late to buy ammo in any quantity, except for 22 caliber ammo. There are 50 rounds of 22 long rifle per box. There are 500 rounds per case, often called a brick, and these are still cheap to buy. But keep in mind that a 22 caliber bullet will not penetrate an ordinary windshield, and it can be stopped effectively with ordinary thick rawhide. So it doesn't even really make a good defense weapon. It's a nice plinking weapon. It's a nice small game weapon as long as you're close in. It has zero effectiveness unless the shot is expertly placed on the game. And I should add that the 22 long rifle round is outlawed in every state in use for hunting. It's only approved for target practice. So you be careful out there. Possession of a gun with ammo is against the law in many states, as the possession of a gun with the intention to go armed. That's what the regulation says. If you don't believe me, you just talk to somebody in Georgia who gets pulled over with a gun in their glove box, even if the gun is not loaded. If the ammunition is in the glove box with the gun, that is possession of a firearm with the intention to go armed. You must store your ammo separately from your gun. And if you are caught with a gun, you will be arrested. You will be fingerprinted and you will be charged. You think you're a law-abiding citizen? Just get pulled over with a firearm in your car with ammunition and you'll find out. You will lose your gun and your ammo, so know the law if you are traveling with a gun in your car or truck. So, as we approach 2012 and the events that are predicted to change the way we exchange commerce with one another, the way we get paid, the way you buy stuff, the way you fuel up your vehicle, the way you supply water to your home, electricity to your business, we can be empowered to care for ourselves. So we do not have to be rounded up and cared for in one of these FEMA camps. We can prepare in advance and not only survive, but we can flourish. Okay? We are enjoying unprecedented times with unlimited potential for success right now. But the earth is going to go through this change. And we are intelligent enough to have survived many trips through this region of space. Fortunately, our ancestors were determined enough to leave us a warning. That's why we've built these spacecraft. That's why we've launched the satellites and the measuring systems and experiments that we have. That's why we've taken these precautions. That's why the government has spent billions of dollars upgrading abandoned facilities. That's why they're trying to get ready to handle mass amounts of people and yes, mass amounts of loss of life. Millions of coffins and the ability to handle millions of people in a method that's rather dehumanizing. Yes, it has been done, and we have done it before. We interned Japanese during World War II. We moved massive amounts of people out of cities during the Civil War, and we will do it again. I'm just saying that we have the chance to come through it with the skills, the tools, and the ability to progress beyond the predator and soldier mentality. We can transcend those who would herd us like bipedal cattle and leave them with nothing to do but stare at each other across the empty parking lots of these FEMA camps, okay? You right now are in the past of these events, okay, in what we call the present. We provided you a memory of time you don't want to see. And you are now empowered to choose another future. And I am asking you to do so. Okay? I think you have it in you to do this. I think you have the ability to choose it. I think you have the ability to go out there and make something of this. Okay? I think it can be done. I don't think we have to be treated like sheeple by the government. So call in, and in this next hour, I want to talk about your vision of the future. What do you want to see? Now, we have often talked about 2012 and how it's going to affect you, how it's going to affect your daily lives. I've got kids in college. Do you think that I want them to drop out of school and think that there's no hope in doing any of this? There's no hope in learning anything because life as we know it is going to end? No, I don't. In fact, I think it is a time for smart people that can see through this fear, and they know how to do stuff. They know how to build stuff. They know how to recover stuff. We know how to do this. We get the hard copies of how to build those transformers. We get the hard copies of how to continue the mining and the smelting and making of raw materials so that we don't have to go another 200 or 300 years before the human race can come back from this. We're going to go through this. We're going to go through it together. It's going to take 3 or 4 or 5 years to get through it, but we will get through it. We're already ramping up to it, okay? The average temperature of the Earth is falling slightly, but the extremes are there. We're seeing much worse winters and much worse summers. We're seeing record heat waves and record cold waves. We're seeing record rainfall and record droughts. The extremes of weather are taking place all around the planet. These are the events that lead up to this event as we travel through the galactic plane. So write the number down. You got about 4 minutes to put your thoughts together, and we'll be right back. 530-413-4511. 530-413-4515. 530-413-4520. And if you want to reach us by cell phone, step away from your computer for a while, no problem. 712-432-0075. Then dial 318-116-pound. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Listen to Enigma. Goodbye, Milky Way. Be right back.
Better world.
All right, Earth Explorers, welcome back to Expert Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. This is where the past meets the future, and the reason that we bring this information to you in this manner is to empower you, is to bring you to the point where you can take control of your future. You can take control of the future of the Earth. And we've asked our listeners tonight to call in and give us a vision of what their version of the future might be, how we're going to go through this, how we're going to not just survive but flourish as the human race. I also want to let you know about our affiliate, 1-800-PREPARE.com. It's kind of an appropriate affiliate. Go to their website, check it out. They've got a special $49 three-day supply for two people. Grab and go. It's good for 25 years. You never have to think about it again. When you go to check out, put in the code Brooks, my name, B-R-O-O-K-S. You get another 10% off. That's how much Paul Faust believes in our listeners. 530-413-4511 off planet. 530-413-4511 west of Earth. 530-413-4520 east of Earth. And if you're listening by cell phone, obviously you can't call in, but if you want to, 712-432-0075, then put in the access code 318-116-POUND. All right, let's go to Gail on line one. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brooks.
How are
you? Well, this is a very I'm fantastic. This is an interesting show tonight, and I'm glad you're doing this topic.
I was a little worried about, you know, because we don't normally do this kind of subject matter. And when I was doing research on it, quite frankly, I was a little humbled by it, that it wasn't just it wasn't just the fringe. It was mainstream media. It was NASA. It was the government. It was a CDC. I mean, they're all working on it. So this is real. It's really going to happen. Yeah. So anyway, I'm interested in your thoughts.
It's about as real as real can get. Yeah. I don't know if you know a gentleman named John Moore, who has a radio show, and he's called the Liberty Man. But anyway, he has insider information from a lot of the retired Navy people that have been moving in mass quantities, their families and everything, into around the Arkansas, around the Ozarks. And all of them, you know, he's a private detective for different local law enforcement agencies. They use him whenever they, you know, need investigations. And he's, you know, really has some, he really has his pulse on insider information that says that this is real. They have been shown the maps. And the current theme is that all these maps and all these different people that he interviewed at different times who did not know anything about the other person being interviewed all told the same thing, that these maps show that everything east of the Blue Ridge Parkway will be underwater. That's why the CIA, the IRS, and nasty little people, but anyway, all of your major alphabet agencies have quietly been moving in towards the Denver, Colorado area.
That's They've true. Been working That's on true. It I vigilantly. Have heard that.
Yes, well, he'll confirm it. It's a fact. They are. Now, that's why they know what's coming. I found it interesting when you were talking about, you know, banning lead. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but earlier this week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, the EPA, I think it was, came out and said that they wanted to ban lead. And never really gave a reason why. They just said, you know, they needed to ban it. And before the day was over,
did the Condor study is the guy that filed the lawsuit that gave the EPA the quasi-authority to make this. Now, the NRA yesterday came out and made a statement. Actually, it was Friday. They came out and made a statement that the EPA doesn't have authority to do this. And the NRA is trying to sue the EPA to block them in court. But I can tell you the reasoning for this, Gail, goes way high. It's not just about the lead. It certainly is not about the lead, a natural occurring metal in our environment. Mm-hmm. It is about the ammunition. But this is a very benign way of making a move on the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, don't watch what my right hand's doing. You know, I got the left hand behind my back, but watch this other hand. That's the game they play. That's their M.O. And the next thing you know is that they've got this bill they're trying to pass right now where they're going to make it illegal for families, individuals to grow their own fruits and vegetables, or even, and if they do, you know, to trade them with neighbors or anything like that, it's actually going to be a chargeable criminal offense. I don't know how they intend on enforcing that, but I guess we'll
see. I was really unaware of that. I mean, what are they trying to, you know, like when you come into California, you're not allowed to bring any kind of produce because you might bring a fruit fly with you that could be devastating to their crops. I understand that. But why would they prevent somebody from growing summer squash in their garden and trading it for zucchini? What's that?
Hello? It's for health issues because haven't you noticed all the massive recall right now? That's to terrorize, I think, the public. And so now they want to attack, you know, the food that would grow because it might have E. coli or God only knows whatever else. And this is now why they want to pass this, because it's for our best interest that we should let the governments, you know, and the corporations grow all of our food for us. I don't know, Brooks, if this is just to intimidate people, to plant that thought in their mind to discourage them from, you know, being self-sufficient for their families and neighbors and so. I don't know. But I'm going to tell you what my vision that I see is. And I'm with you. We will get through this. We have survived in the past, and we will survive this time, too.
Well,
we don't really know how extensive it's going to be.
It's not going to be like a Y2K event where, you know, you just kind of weather it and hope your 401K makes it through.
No.
This is going to be a more protracted thing. If we do go without electricity, I mean, you realize how much we rely on that to pump our water and our sewage and, you know, create potable water for ourselves. I mean, I have a lot of friends in the city. They live in condos on the 18th floor or the 10th floor. They don't have a two-day supply of food, let alone a two-month supply of food.
I know. And they're really going to be caught, pardon the pun, but with their pants down. And, God, everybody that I talked to for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been trying to tell them that things were coming. I mean, you know, I just read an article not even 2 hours ago that says that they're now getting a confirmation that the water, the conveyor belt water has shut down in the Atlantic, which is what oscillates, well, I know you know, but I mean, you know, that's what oscillates and keeps Europe, like England and things, from being totally frozen over. And now that is shutting down. Well, that regulates our climate. I mean, the whole ecosystem is shutting down. It's getting ready for a reboot, like a computer.
Yeah, like a big control, alt, delete. I could see it coming. What we're trying to talk about on X Squared Radio here, we've been on the air now for 5 years. We talk about wonderful, enlightening things. We talk about cosmology and time travel and UFOs and all the wonderful things that inspire us and add variety to our lives. We're not talking about survival here. We're talking about moving upward as an evolutionary species and not being knocked back down to the level of Cro-Mag, okay? That's what we're talking about here. That's what we're trying to reach, a level of empowerment and enlightenment to where people can move through this with love. I honestly don't think the government, any government, will survive this. But the people
will. I don't either, Brooke. I don't, because this is a different time. It's a new time, and this is our opportunity to evolve. And the way we do that is leave the monetary plan behind. Do not take it into this new brave world. We need to learn to be sustainable to one another without putting a dollar or money value on it. Now, I hear that nowhere else in any other civilization out there off world They don't have a money system, and they don't have a time system. It's pretty much the only one in like pretty much this galaxy. We're here on Earth, so you know this is time for us to. It's a great opportunity if we'll seize it. Go ahead.
We have a functioning economy in this planet because, you know, you and I, we go to our jobs and we exchange our skills and our labor for a piece of paper that assures the next person with whom we're going to do commerce that we have done that work, that we have earned some value with our skill or our labor or whatever it is that we do with our living and or whatever we sell. And that we can take that down to the dentist or to the grocery store or to the auto mechanic, and we can exchange that paper so that he too can carry on that promise to pay, that exchange of value. But, you know, I think you're right, Gail, but what I would like to know is what are your thoughts about how we would move away from this somewhat universal method of exchange, namely cash, and move towards some other method whereby it wasn't so much the wealth that we could accumulate that would give us great value, but more the skills that we could accumulate, more the value to society that we can accumulate. How do we move toward? How do we move toward that? How do we accomplish that?
I think that we have, you know, each one of us come here in this body that we're experiencing this 3D time right now. And I think that we have to first of all, within ourselves, realize the gifts that we came here to share with one another. And we all have special gifts. And, you know, like, I'm into the animals. You're into building things with your mind and then putting it into physical. You're into understanding the elements. The next person down here may be a fantastic music artist who we need that music to soothe the soul in the evenings after our work. But as a community, as the Indian said, because we no longer can live together in large groups, that after the earth changes this time, we'll be in small groups and learn to live with each other again at that time. But I think that we need to, first of all, take a deep look at ourselves.
I think the sociology of large groups, mega cities with tens of millions of people in them, maybe those days are gone. Obviously, if we don't have electricity to do the bulk of the work for us and to move us around so that we can, you know, make it from place to place and to deliver the bounty of the agricultural part of the world to us, then we are going to have to break apart away from these megacities. But it means that the electrical grid and the water grid and the sewage grid is going to have to change and flex. And that's going to require a lot of work. I think we're up to it, but I think you're right. We got to think about the way we socialize as a people. Now, we are connected together as a globe through the internet. It doesn't matter whether you live in a small town in Afghanistan or whether you live in New York City. You can reach just about everyone on the planet right now. You're not isolated in that way. We're about to be re-isolated. So how does the human race have to change in order to keep that togetherness moving forward?
Use what was given to us when we come here, and I think that's what the whole lesson of this lifetime is about. Start using that sixth sense. Open up your pineal gland. And then you'll learn, because, you know, there was a man that walked on this earth 2,000 years ago who said, "These things that I do, greater shall ye do." So, let's talk about what the man did. And then you apply that to your life. And you see what our potential is that we haven't even begun to crack yet? Einstein only used 10% of his brain, and then he was termed one of the genius of all time. But that other 90%, just think of what our capacity would be if we could tap into that DNA and mitochondria and learn how to actually use that sixth sense where we create as we go. It is within our potential. We are divine beings.
It's kind of like this, you know, there's that whole mustard seed thing. And then there's the idea that you kind of have to get off your butt and work. And these kinds of societies have been tried in the past. Now, admittedly, it's not the highly developed social being we are now. It isn't the highly intelligent with lots of aptitude human being we are now. But it has been tried in the past. And what it usually ends up with is 80% of the people, or 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people, and you got a large number of people who do nothing but consume. So what do we do about getting everybody to participate in the system?
Well, it's obvious that that is a self-choice. And, you know, you take them into the group, and you try to work with them and to get them to understand where they're feeling these feelings that they do, of whether it's they have feelings of not having enough self-worth, or they have feelings of that everything belongs to me and I deserve this.
We do have people like that in our society that believe the world owes them a living.
Yes.
And they will not lift a finger to help themselves. They believe everyone else should give to them so that they can have everything that they want. Not everything they need, that can be done, but everything they want. And if they can't get it, they'll just take it. And believe it or not, we've got not 2%. We probably have 15 or 20% of our society that does just that. They don't pay any taxes. They don't earn any wages. And yet we provide health care for them, we provide education for them, we provide clothing for them and food for them, transportation for them, and we take care of them from the day they're born to the day that we bury them.
Well, Johnson made sure to that, though, Brooks, and it was called our welfare system, the benefits package, social package. And it has done a lot to perpetuate that continual generational thing. And I think that in this brave new world we're headed towards, and when all the dust settles, if you will, the person who thinks that they're owed everything might find themselves setting outside the circle and will get pretty dang hungry and thirsty. And this might give them a preview of just how life is going to be. It can be hard, or you can come into the circle, into the fold, and learn how to change your way.
Well, we already see examples of this in our world. I mean, we see little industrious nations that can send a few hardworking people out into the pounding, dry, arid desert and turn it into a lush, green paradise. Look at the Mormons. Look at the Jews. I mean, come on. They took absolute desolation places on the earth and turned them into lush, green paradises. And those paradises can get handed over to another people who will not lift a finger to help one another, and it reverts right back to desert in just a couple of years.
I guess they're going to be pretty hungry and thirsty, aren't they? Because, as they say, birds of a feather will flock together. And I think that they'll just implode on one another and, you know, basically eat each other up. I hope not literally, but that is a possibility.
Or they climb the fence and come over in your yard and take what you have.
Yeah, that too. Well, that's why, you know, groups will have to band together to protect one another in the beginning. And you're going to have like-minded within the group. And you have to have common goals, and no one's sitting around trying to be a self-defeatist before you can even get ideas and plans off the ground. It's going to be a team effort. Yeah,
the John Smith mentality, work or die.
Well, I'm quite sure that our forefathers, when they went through, you know, these cyclical events, went through the same things. In fact, I'm sure.
Yeah, but our forefathers had something we don't have. They had a frontier to
fortitude.
Go to. You know, our forefathers had a frontier to go to. We don't have a frontier anymore.
I know. Well, and we've become very soft through our technology, too.
Well, maybe if John Moore is right and these predictions that we've made and the series, The Arc of Millions of Years, are right, and these 500-meter tsunamis hit the coast and clean off the thinkings and doings of mankind down to the sandbar, maybe there will be wilderness again to work with.
Exactly. It's about to have the reset button hit again. It happens. We're going into the fifth world. The Hopi, the Mayans, the Incas, all of them talk about these different worlds that we've been through, and we're going into the final and fifth new world. So,
well, there are those that believe this is the final one, that this is it for Earth, and it's probably it for the universe, and we're going to go into the fifth dimension or sixth dimension and move on to higher and better things. Others believe this is just another cataclysm for the human race, and it's not necessarily the young that will survive. It might be the smart that survive.
That's right. And those that have a heart, those that are in service to others. The service to self will probably perish within, you know, they'll have to trade in that meat suit, as we call it. But, you know, nothing's wasted of the creation of the Godhead. And you'll just move on to another third density until you get it right. So, it's nothing lost. But if you don't make that change to better yourself, nothing gained either. I'll leave everybody with that thought tonight.
So, you feel the way that I do, right? If you have beachfront property, it's about time to put it on the market and be gathering your assets and heading for higher ground. Looks like we lost Gail. That's all right. Gail is a great contributor. I appreciate her thoughts. Anyone else out there that has any thoughts? We've got about 20 minutes. So if you want to join us, it's 530-413-4511, off-planet. We haven't had an off-planet call in a while. So if you're up there, get to a cell phone tower. 4511 is the last four digits. West of Earth, 530-413-4515. East of Earth, 530-413-4520. Those of you that are listening on cell phone, no problems there. By the way, if you're not an archive listener, if you're listening live somewhere around the planet, this is August 29, 2010. If you're listening between 5 and 8 Pacific time, you're live and you can call in. If you're outside that time period, then you're listening to an archive. Check your subscription. Make sure it's not going to expire. It's only $20 a year. It helps us keep the lights on here. It helps us pay for our airtime on the BBS radio network. It also helps us pay for the syndication efforts that we're making so that we get to play on the airwaves. We can reach a much bigger audience, although I think our audience is particularly well empowered since you are sitting there with a laptop and a credit card in your hands, as opposed to somebody who's holding onto a steering wheel listening to a program. Nevertheless, we want to reach as many people as we can with an uplifting and enlightening message along the scientific and bring the past and the future together right here in the present on X Squared Radio. That's what we do as we talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. As we wrap up this program, about 17 minutes now, we are talking about the 2012 events. Now, you've heard rumors, you've heard New Age people talk about it, you've heard people talk about it on the street. Some of you think, oh, you know what, it's just like a Y2K, we're going to sail right through this, and in 2013, all you guys are going to have to be quiet, unless you modify your time frame and say, oh, we were wrong about 2012. It's actually going to be 2018. And then here comes another big marketing push. I don't think so. We've got governments, multinational governments, working together all around the world. And they are building facilities. As you have heard in the first couple of hours of our program, they're building camps with barbed wire around them, with the ability to handle large amounts of biological waste, with the ability to bury large amounts of people, because the last thing in the world that you want are unburied people. If you've got a disease going around, or you've got some kind of plague, or you've got some kind of extinction event that takes place with massive amounts of radiation or lack of water, something like that, these preparations are being made, people. These facilities have been built. They're sitting there with Air Force trains and Army cranes and helicopter facilities. They're built. They're out there. Those billions of dollars have been spent, and they're sitting there ready to go. The landowners that own the land where these portable coffins are being stored are receiving regular checks from the Centers for Disease Control. The Federal Emergency Management Association or Administration is managing these properties right now as we speak. And as Gail mentioned, many of the command and control, this is the sometimes second and even third tier of infrastructural control, IRS records, health records, military records, and some of the more stable parts where you're able to put government back together are being relocated away from the office buildings in Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and the outer belt of Maryland. They're being moved away from there to the mountains above Denver, Colorado. What was formerly and it still is the NORAD facility is now much expanded as up well above a mile, some of it up towards 2 miles in elevation. Deep in the granite mountains of the Rockies is where these protective areas are being built, well away from the oceans, protected from these kinds of cataclysms, protected from solar flares, protected from giant tsunamis, fairly geotechnical stability. Yes, they have earthquakes, but these are the kinds of areas that don't necessarily change a lot, geographically speaking or geologically speaking. Some of the low-lying areas like Florida, southern Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, southern Georgia, eastern North Carolina, South Carolina, these are the kinds of places that are particularly susceptible to some kind of tsunami or major storm surge event in the Atlantic or the Gulf of Mexico. We are beginning this end of this month here in about 2 weeks. We're getting ready to start the hurricane season again in the Gulf of Mexico. Those of you that watch the news and know what's going on, in 2005, Hurricane Katrina came through. Yes, it damaged some coastal towns, but that wasn't the major infrastructural damage, okay? Just displacing people and moving them around for a couple of weeks, wiping out a lot of the single-family homes along the coast. That wasn't a major loss. The major loss occurred because most of the nation's refineries are located along that Gulf of Mexico, and they got shut down. And when they got shut down, our ability to fuel our nation was cut off. And that is what caused $5 diesel fuel prices, high $4 gasoline prices. This is what damaged our economy. If that happens again, I can tell you, if you don't have an electric vehicle, you're going to be walking. You will not be able to afford to drive. We've got a couple more comments Gail wants to give us. Gail's back. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Brooks. I'm sorry I hung up so fast there. I thought other people were going to call in, but they didn't, so that's fine. But we need to talk about, since some people may still be sitting on the skeptic fence here, but if you remember in the last couple of years, they've taken all the heirloom seed from around the world and put it in the seed vault up there in Norway.
And that was actually brought together in pretty short order, you know. That was a lot of money.
Yes, it was.
I think, who is it? I think it's Bill Gates and the Rockefellers that funded most of that. Does that sound particularly suspicious to you?
Yes. Yes, it does. And timing. You know, from all these things that we're watching compiling together here can give us a timeline if we'll approach this with an open mind instead of to say, oh, that's just a bunch of kooks. No, the evidence is there. and it's building massively. That the governments are up to something, and they are in panic mode. And you're seeing everywhere, every day, while the mainstream media has actually just kind of dropped off the bandwagon, USGS is no longer reporting all the earthquakes. I mean, some days now we're having sixes and sevens all across the world. There's flooding, massive flooding everywhere. I mean, look at Nashville here. What happened the 1st of May? That was a 1,000-year flood. I don't even know if they had records to know what was happening 1,000 years ago with the 7-0. But look at Pakistan. Look at China. Millions of people have been dislocated in China alone in the last 3 or 4 months. All in South America. And all of the food sources are being destroyed through all of the heat waves and then all of the massive downpours of rain. People getting 20, 26 inches of rain in 24 hours. It's unheard of. Everything is coming to a culmination here. And just because it isn't happening in your neck of the woods, don't go back to sleep and think everything's okay.
Well, that's exactly right. As we said in the books, the national and cataclysmic disasters are increasing in intensity. They're increasing in frequency. And what you don't hear is mainstream media connecting all these dots for the people. Now, the leadership knows what's going on. The leadership is taking action. And those people that listen to X Squared Radio and John Moore and maybe a few other programs out there, they're taking some action. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. I don't know. Maybe they're not calling or writing or going to 1-800-PREPARE.com and putting together a 3-day emergency preparedness kit. Maybe they're not plowing up their backyards with their fine lawns and putting in a garden. Maybe they're not taking any of those precautions. Maybe they haven't listened to anything that we've asked them to do. I don't know.
What about Tom Cruise? Remember, he's building a big, huge underground survival thing right now as we speak. Tom Cruise, the actor.
We've got to make sure our actors survive. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, what do the Scientologists know? You know, they're a group that's really been ostracized because of Ron Hubbard. Maybe that was a man before his time. Who knows? I really haven't delved off into researching that organization too much. I just read bits and pieces. But here you have, you know, a very wealthy actor who is now building an underground survival unit, as he calls it, in his backyard, and he's frantically digging it. That was reported, I don't know, 9 months ago. I guess he's still working on it.
He isn't alone. He isn't alone. You know, you go to the internet and look up some of these companies that build. Some of these bunkers are buryable. Some of them are above ground. They can be anchored down or covered with rocks or dirt or whatever. Sales have never been higher.
That's right. And, you know, all of these retired Navy people, a lot of them were submarine people that are moving into the Ozarks. Guess what type of homes they're building? Dome homes.
Yeah,
there's a whole group of NASA people. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, in the Pacific Northwest, they're doing the same thing. I mean, my good friend Jay-Z Knight has advised people that she's been teaching for over 25 years, people, it's time to build that house in the mountains, in the hillside, okay? Forget about the high-pitched roofs and the, you know, the double-insulated dome arch glass and leaded glass and all that. This is a home that you're going to live in for the next 2 to 5 years, and you got to make it where it will stand up to what's going to happen.
There is a group of NASA people who are building whole communities of dome homes up there in the, I want to say, Montana, Wyoming area.
Excellent place.
You know, they're headed towards what their best guess is the safest places.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are valleys up there that are surrounded by the Bitterroot Mountains. There are no people up there. Lots of woods, lots of water stored in the mountains there, lots of game. And you've got valleys there with little towns in them that are completely isolated from the outside world. Nothing's going to get in there unless it drops out of space right on top of them.
Mm-hmm. And they're putting that buffer between all of those that will be migrating into trying to find food and water off of these coastal areas. And I'm going to tell you, and I wish to heavens that I would have printed this off, because you know how things disappear on the Internet. But I remember reading an article back during, I don't know, it had been about a month after the big old fiasco with the oil spill out there in the Atlantic with BP. And there was, and you know, there was this big hype about that they were going to have to start evacuating some of the southern Gulf states. And this article talked about that Obama had gave an order to the HARP facility in Alaska to keep that high or low pressure going so none of these hurricanes would hit when all this oil was still on the surface of the water. So corrects it, got his job done, I guess. But anyway, along with that article talking about, you know, that there was going to be these evacuations, it also stated in there that Obama was making plans for mass evacuations for all coastal living Americans. That only stayed around on the Internet for 2 or 3 days, and then the article was pulled. I couldn't find it anywhere. It's been scrubbed. Now, and well, then I thought to myself that day when I read the article, okay, I can understand why they're talking about evacuating people on the Gulf Coast because of this oil spill, but this said that they were going to be evacuating in the near future, evacuating all people off the coastal areas of the United States. And I said, what?
Well, that is actually a very old operation. It's called Operation Garden Plot. We did a piece on that here. We talked to John Elinoff about it because we talked about this false flag event that was the BP oil spill. Frankly, now we look back on it in retrospect, it was a test run. It was a dry run because one of the things that we determined when we chased down all the leads, we did all the interviews, we followed the money, we looked at the patterns of investment and divestiture of Goldman Sachs and, Transocean and all these people that were involved. We determined that the BP breakdown of Deep Horizon, which was the oil rig that had the disaster, it was indeed a disaster, but it was also no accident.
Mm-hmm. No. Too many big players, too much money. Look at old Simmons. He's dead now. Isn't that interesting? Drowned in his hot tub? Oh, okay. Heart attack, yeah.
Yeah, perfectly willing, athletic man, or healthy athletic man sits in his hot tub and just passes away.
Gotcha. That's like them suicides where they've shot themselves in the back 3 times and then in the head, and they're tied with their hands behind them.
Well, it's like suicide. The CEO of General Motors, you know, a week before he comes out and says, we don't like being called Government Motors. It's degrading to us. We prefer to be called General Motors. This is not what we wanted. And the next week, here's a guy that makes tens of millions of dollars a year, and he's been asked to resign. And he's gone, just like that.
I know. I know, there's lots of strange things going on. But the article, Brooks, was, you know, when we were talking about that, we know, I think, well, we'll never know the whole story, but we can put the pieces together about this oil spill and catastrophe there. But why would they make the statement that they were preparing to evacuate people even on the West Coast?
Oh, I don't know how that's ever happened. You got 32 million people that live on the west coast of California. They're the 11th largest economy in the world by themselves.
I know. So and how I know would they be evacuating them?
They say, put me at ground zero. If I can't have my view of the ocean and my sailboat and my $50,000 a month job, I don't want to live. Take me out. You're not evacuating me.
Careful
forget
what
about
you wish for. You just might get it.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Don't change
about
your mind in midstream.
You know, I was raised there, and I could tell you there were days I sat on the beach there in Santa Monica and looked out at the horizon. I said, you know, this ocean is so peaceful. It's so calm, so beautiful. The weather here is like no place on earth. All the conditions are perfect for almost not having to use air conditioning at all in the summertime. And who needs heat in the wintertime in Santa Monica? It's a very, very green, low-cost place to live. But sitting there on the beach, you wonder, how in the world is this place ever going to survive with a 1,500-foot tsunami that's turned up by the Juan de Fuca plate that undergoes some a volcanic activity, or the continental shelf does a big slough 200 miles off the coast? They won't survive. Well, that'll be it for them.
No, and you remember, too, that there have been submarines that went back up underneath there, you know, that because of all the ocean erosion underneath that whole shelf sitting out there, that it's like a ledge. A lot of the whole western coast now. And submarines, I forget how many miles that they've traveled back underneath that shelf that, you know, that sits above the water there. And there's nothing holding it solid to the ground anymore. So one huge quake, for whatever reason, whether it's a solar flare or pole shift, you can have numerous scenarios on how, but what's to prevent the whole thing from cracking off? And nothing.
That's right. And
our government's aware of that, too.
Needs. And then Las Vegas is beachfront property.
Yeah, well, it might even go in as far as Montana and Wyoming too.
Well, they've had their share up there. We've had 25,000 years ago had numerous massive floods that occur when these ice dams form, and then what happens is the spring-fed water melts the ice, and then eventually the ice dam breaks, and you've got a 1,500-foot wall of water traveling 140 miles an hour that goes all the way to the coast. You can see the basalt trails left behind when these floods repeatedly strip the topsoil right off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've been all out in that area. I lived in Washington State for about 8 years. Yeah, it's all beautiful country out there, but I think Mama Earth's about to do some housekeeping and rearrange some furniture.
Well, that's a pretty good point. I like your take on it. Anyway, keep listening to the program, and Gail, we appreciate you so much out there. It's people like you that keep the word alive, that keep X Squared Radio on the air. We try to, you know, at least stay a little ways back from the leading edge so we don't get hurt, but, we're trying to bring a scientific and inspirational and open-minded, not so much fear-mongering, message to the people. And it feels good to us.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, have a great night and be safe for the rest of the week, Brooks. And may all your dreams and all your wishes come true for everyone out there. Time to get busy, folks.
I hope so, too. Tuesday, we're meeting with the ambassador of Singapore. She's coming to the country to drive our electric truck. So we're happy about it. All right, so we have about 4 minutes left. Not enough time to do another call, Justice. I do want to let you know again that website is 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our good friend Paul Faust, former firefighter, is a partner in EMT. They put 1-800-PREPARE.com. Check out the website. Pick up your 72-hour kit for two. Comes complete with a book bag, everything you need to grab and go. $49, a 3-day kit for two people. Two people cannot eat on $49 at restaurants, but you're going to have everything you need, and it's good for 25 years. You don't have to touch it again. Just put it in the closet. Hopefully you never need it, but if you do, guess what? You have it. You have it. You don't have to worry about the local grocery store. You don't have to worry about McDonald's being up or Walmart being open. You could take care of yourself. Do it now while you have the money, while you're thinking about it. Also, don't forget, remembering the future, the physics of the soul and time travel, tomorrow will be live on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Walden Books, everywhere where fine books are sold. Pick up your copy. Tell your friends about it. We'll be doing some radio promotions out there. If you want the autographed copy, you'll have to go to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. Purchase the book there. We'll send you the printed version, coupon for 25% off. You'll get the audio, access to the audio version, and you'll have it autographed. So that's how we want you to take care of yourself. Great program tonight. We really appreciate the feedback. Good stuff coming in the chat room. Next week, I think we've got a guest coming in. Access xsquaredradio.com. We'll let you know what the September lineup is. If you have any suggestions for the program, any suggested guests, get a hold of Don down at BBS Radio. Let us know. Or you can click on the Suggest a Guest link at xsquaredradio.com. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Both links are at xsquaredradio. Share the audio, if you like, out there on xsquaredradio or on Facebook. You can do that by going to the WebTalk version of xsquaredradio. It's a little short 30-minute programs, very fast-paced. Sometimes we have guests, sometimes we don't, but this is designed to build a following for syndication for X Squared Radio so that perhaps I can stop doing this as a hobby and start doing it as a semi-profession, maybe even a profession. And I would guarantee you I'd put a little more effort into it. You see a little more preparation. But you know what? We kind of like Internet talk radio because you get a flavor for live radio. Sometimes you hear a busy signal. Sometimes you hear a disconnected phone call or garbled sound. I mean, this is like old vinyl records used to be to music. Now everything's all CD, digital, mastered, and the timing is perfect. There's no humanity to the music. It's all machine-generated. This is the real analog, even though it's a digital world here on the Internet. It's really the analog of talk radio, because this is where all the bloopers happen. You get to be part of it. You get to hear it. And whether you're listening live here on X Squared Radio Sunday, August 29th, or whether you're listening to it as an archive while you're working on your favorite project, we feel you there. I've been there. I've had the headphones on myself while I'm working on AutoCAD or soldering wires together, or putting parts together for electric vehicles to try to lead us out of this petroleum morass that we're in. I'm listening. I'm fascinated by the content that we cover. We have some wonderful guests that have been on here, from Bruce Lipton, Dr. Ed Close. We've had Stanton Friedman, hundreds and hundreds of guests over the last 5 years. Almost 700 hours of content now. X Squared Radio is streaming over 2 gigabytes a day, every day, audio content all around the world. And it's because of you. It's because of you, the listener. And it's also because of you, the writers, and you, the researchers, that send us the books that we read that inspire me to put together an interview and have you on the program. If you've got such content, you've made a film, you've written a paper, you've got an idea, you've built a prototype, you've got some research or some discovery, go ahead and contact us. You don't have to come on for 3 hours. You can come on for half an hour. Come on for an hour. We'll talk about it. People want to know, and this is your outlet right here, because this is where we discover and discuss the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited about you being here. I love to sit behind this microphone every Sunday evening and talk to you for 3 hours. I enjoy it. It's not an escape for me. It's a release. It's a fulfillment. And I dreamed about it since I was a little kid, and I'm glad to share that time with you. And we will see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. Peace, Earth Explorers. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth.
If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.